This is the Outsource Accelerator Podcast, exploring business and outsourcing mastery. Let's do it. Hi, and welcome to the Outsource Accelerator Podcast. My name is Derek Gallimore, and today with us, we have a very special guest. It's Pia Gladys Pare. Now, Pia is a good friend of mine, but I am just in awe of this girl, and I'm probably her biggest fanboy. Pia is the founder and head of her fashion label, and that, coincidentally, is called Pia Gladys Pare. So, Pia has a fantastic story, and in this episode, we outline Pia's origin. She had a very humble background, very humble beginning, and there's something to be said for that in the Philippines. You know, humble is not the same kind of humble as humble in the West. And against all odds, Pia has really succeeded. She's built a business from scratch. She still owns the whole business. She's self-funded, and she has taken on the world. Now, Pia has launched the brand, and it's her biggest market currently is Australia. But now she's breaking into the US as well in you know, fantastic fashion. So it's really quite an interesting story, and a story that I champion, because I think that it's valuable to see people in the Philippines really taking on the world. And, you know, a lot of our listeners, a lot of our audience really look at the Philippines as a back office solution. So I think that it's interesting to see and look commercially at people in the Philippines that are actually taking on the world and accessing the world markets from here. So I hope you enjoy the episode. If you want any of the show notes, that is to be found at outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast/episode 7 for this episode. Enjoy. Okay, so we have Pia Gladys Pare with us today. I'm super excited about this. It's taken me a while to get you in this room with me, Pia, but welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. Yeah. And today I just really want to introduce you and your story. And it's quite an unusual story and quite an incredible and inspiring story. I'll let you introduce yourself, but you're a fashion designer. Yes. And have your own label.
Correct.
And you successfully have launched a label not only in the Philippines, but also it's in Australia and also getting pretty big in America now, yeah?
I hope so.
Wow.
After all that work that I did. Yes.
And how did you start off? Because I have roots in Sydney as well, and you made your big break.
In Australia. Well, but I started here. But what I did is I got off law school, like, as fast as I can.
You did law school?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I
did not know that.
I was, that's why I always say I'm, like, legally blonde, but the other way around. Because, from law school to fashion, I was just really feeling it. And it was literally like a divine intervention, I'm telling. Like, this is what I say, and it's funny. Like, I woke up one day, I want to be a designer. And I'm the type of person, when I want something, like, I'm going to move heaven and earth, mountains and everything, just to get what I want. So I...
Because your story is sort of slightly more special, because you are legally blind as well.
Yes, clinically blind. I was clinically blind. Yeah.
You also had no education in fashion.
No, but I grew up with my grandmother, who loves fashion. Because I was clinically blind since I was 4 months old, I wouldn't, you know, back in like in country towns, people or kids play on the street. And my grandmother hated it when I go out and play, because I end up going home crying, because the kids would tease me. Other kids are mean, you know. Some kids are really mean.
Because you couldn't see what you were doing.
Yeah, and then the muscles in my eyes were not aligned, and then I was just running into things. They thought at first I was clumsy, but it was just really that. I'm still clumsy now. So I stayed with her most of the time, but the great thing about it is that she would make dresses and I would watch her make dresses. She would make dresses for me and my sister. She's just the ultimate model for somebody who has 8 kids and housewife in a country town, like below middle class family.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She has a revolving Chirac with a glass door. How can you beat that?
Wow.
So yeah, the highlight of my day would always be waiting for her to come out of her room to see what she's wearing. She will be in heels with her hair properly curled or whatever, but she's just really going to cook rice or something.
Yeah. I see where you've got your inspiration from, Pia.
Yeah, so when she passed away when I was 11, so I kind of forgot about it. But yeah, and then I had that divine intervention. Mm. Decided that I'm going to call each designer in the Philippines possible. Somebody hired me, fortunately. Maybe I called about 30 and somebody hired me finally. I'm quite persistent or stubborn. I think my parents call it stubborn.
Yeah.
I try to sugarcoat it and say I'm persistent. So what happened is that I became the assistant of one of the most promising designers during that time. This was like 2000. And I worked so hard. Like, I remember everyone's partying during the millennium break. Right. And I was delivering dresses.
Oh.
it was fun. But I was like, I'm delivering dresses. I need to hurry because I had my son then already. So I'm like, I need to hurry because I need to be with him. But yeah, it was fun. And then I just like, that's made to order, that's couture. And then after that, I'm like, okay, I learned couture. Then I'm going to go to another like department or look in fashion. So I went to retailers. I worked with Kashika, which is like, how do you compare? It's like a latest line.
Right.
They have multiple stores. So, and then I learned merchandising there because I'm the type who just learn as I go, or I would just be like,
you learn by doing. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, I learned this in Cosmo magazine. Could be dangerous sometimes, but it says there, act confident until you are.
Okay.
So when I go on job interviews, even if I don't know what I'm signing up for, I will be like, yeah. And I think it also helps because I had the eye for it. It's not just because they will. I know that I can do the job if I am patient enough to sit there and figure it out. So I just learned merchandising there, which is a bit complex. That's a technical part of fashion. And then another job. And then I decided to open my factory.
Wow.
At 24.
Was that because you had a not a lucky break, but you had a break in Sydney in the fashion week. Right?
Well, I went there to volunteer for fashion week because I was done exploring here. So I went there. And they were happy. They're like, this girl's crazy. She came here to be a slave backstage.
Yeah.
But then they knew I was a designer here. So they kind of, well, make the long story short, I ended up presenting as one of the designers. And then, but there were 300 of us and there are only 12 slots. So I'm like, there's no way that I'm going to get in. So I was ready to go home. But then I got in. So there I did my first international show in Sydney.
Wow.
Fashion Week in 2000. I'm actually on my 10th year now. 2007 was my first show.
Yeah, we have the big party coming up.
Yes, we do. It will be massive.
Fantastic. And then it's gone from strength to strength from then. And how do you get your business guidance? Do you have mentors? Do you work with other people in the fashion industry?
That's where I got lucky with, I think. Because the thing is, in Australia, I met this lady who is the head of, and I was just a volunteer then. She was the head of textile clothing footwear for the whole world. And I didn't know that she was. I was just like, chatting with her. Mm. And then she told me that there's some people in the Philippines that she worked with that next time I go home, maybe I can help them. So I'm like, okay. And then I also got taught by one of the founders of Billabong. So he gave me the fashion calendars. And then I would just like attend every possible free seminar that textile clothing footwear will give in Sydney. And then I also interned for 3 Australian designers. I always say I interned before internship was cool. So I did my internships. So yeah, I had mentors, and I always say that, you know, how can you figure things out without these people? I'm like,
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They are very important.
And then significantly as well, a lot of business people try and break into America and fail, mm-hmm. you know, and never do. But you have managed to break into the States, and that's your biggest market now, is it?
Well, it's my second biggest market. Australia is still my biggest market. Right. But the thing with the US is it is the toughest market to break. And I'm not going to lie about that. I've been going back and forth since 2013 and then started heavily advertising 2014. But I've been doing shows there since 2010. So it's like, you know, I go and then I just test waters. But I can't really say that. It's all, I believe in luck. And I happened to meet the right people. Like, I feel like when, maybe, you know, I feel like people can feel it when you're ready. So they come to you. So my first ever store that I sold to in the US was the stylist for Sex in the City. She has a store in New York.
Wow.
And that was that's when Sex and the City, the movie was launching. So it was such a big break for me.
And of course, Carrie Bradshaw's one of your heroes.
Oh, yeah? She is. Forever. So that, and then it's funny, and it's also like a sort of pay forward thing, because that lady, the textile clothing footwear lady, I helped her here. I taught like pattern making and dressmaking to women in the province in the Philippines. And then she referred me to someone in LA and then Miami. And then, funny enough, the one she referred me to in LA is a stylist for Angelina Jolie. Wow. So in some, you know, it's like a whirlwind. It happened so fast. And then the next thing I know, my dresses are in her suitcase on the way to Europe, and she wore it on the red carpet. So it was, you know, these two big names, like Patricia Field of Sex and the City and then Angelina Jolie. So it kind of gave you like a stamp of approval, like, you know, like, how can you go wrong with these people? And then I did LA Fashion Week and Miami Fashion Week. So, which are big investments. I think people always... That's the thing. When you always play safe, then you'll get somewhere, but not to the highest extent that you can go. You don't really maximize your potential if you're just too scared. And
people don't appreciate that. Like, they're all big business decisions you have to make, and big risks and big costs that you've
got. Big costs. And people sometimes see it as recklessness. But you have, I always say, you know it inside you if it's going to work or not. And always listen to your guts. So that's what I'm like. I'm going to do it. I know I don't have much, you know, I'm not a big company. My company is still owned by solely me. But there are things that you have to do to put your brand or your company somewhere. And that's what I did.
And so our podcast and a lot of our listeners, know the Philippines for an outsourcing capital of the world, and many of the world's biggest and smallest companies are coming over here and using the cheap resources here to help them in the West or whatever. And you're effectively doing it in reverse. Yeah, you're coming from the Philippines and taking on the world.
Yes.
Like, how is there anything that you see there being different, any competitive advantages, any disadvantages of coming from here?
Well, I always see it as an advantage because with me, especially, I started my company really small. So what I did is that I just expanded it as my orders grew. Then I just added in more people and I just kept training them. And what's good about that is that you build loyalty. And I love working with people here because they always, especially the ones who are in the blue collar industry and the rank and file, they're always happy to go beyond their duty. So that's with me. And And well, people are just naturally happy here.
Wow.
People are just naturally happy here. So yeah, that's the great thing. And then the Philippines, other than, you know, being the Filipinos, other than being hard workers, are very resourceful. So they always find ways to make things work. So to me, it was an advantage. And then in terms of, because the world now is more, you know, is more accepting and more, they like to see how things work on the other side and what they're more open-minded.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the best part about it. They're like, oh, you're from the Philippines. Great. You know, whereas, you know, maybe 30 years back, it won't be the same.
Right.
But I think because the Philippines has been known in the last 10 years or 15 years for giving excellent, especially in customer service, like over the phone or in like technical skills and as well as like skills that I need for my business.
Mm.
So,
because the States is quite close to the Philippines, isn't it?
You know,
there's a lot of cultural overlap.
Yes. Yeah, because we were colonized. So I think that's the reason why. And we are very Americanized in a lot of ways.
Mm.
So we are a bit of everything, I think.
Wow.
Yeah, so I think it's a great thing. And disadvantage, well, it always rains. Not always rains, but when you get the typhoon, then a lot of things stop. I think also, well, the traffic conditions, because it affects people's productivity.
Right.
I believe the country loses so much money because of the traffic.
So
it prevents people from going from one place to another quickly.
Thank you, Pia. You're taking on the world and winning.
Thank you.
Okay, I hope you enjoyed that episode. I really am, as I mentioned, a big fanboy of Pia. She's doing fantastic and incredible to think that she's come from humble beginnings. She was diagnosed as being clinically blind, and yet she's taken on the world, and she's now breaking into the US. Really quite incredible achievements. And do support Pia. Do follow her Facebook page. She has fantastic, fantastic photos on there to check out. If you want any of the show notes for this podcast, go to our website. It is outsourceaccelerator.com/podcast/episode7.